ॐ सहनाभवतु, सहनौ भुनक्तु, सहवीर्यं करवावहै, तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु, मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ ॐ पूर्णमदं पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते, पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरिः ॐ। So far we have seen the description of the pure consciousness given in verse 4 and 5. And it was in extremely contradictory terms, which I have explained to you why, because it is from different standpoints. So from one standpoint, from the standpoint of the pure consciousness itself, it doesn't move, but from the standpoint of Upadhi, it moves. It is far, it is near. Yes, it is far for those who are ignorant, who do not believe in it, who do not know about it. But actually, it is very near for those who have faith, who believe in it. So, and then also in 4, we saw Tasminapo Matarishwa Dadhati. Matarishwa is air. That is, Matarishwa is something which is moving in space, so which is air. Air supports water. Why? Because water is composed of hydrogen and oxygen, which is air. And then air itself is supported by space, because unless there is space, there cannot be air. And then supported, the support of space is the pure consciousness. So basically the idea is that everything has come from pure consciousness itself. And the next verse, it moves not, it is far, it is near, it is inside as well as it is outside. I gave you the example for pot, which is filled with water and then immersed in the ocean. So it's surrounded by the water as well, inside there is water. So actually the idea should not be that consciousness is within me. This body is actually in consciousness. So thoughts are happening in consciousness. The body is moving in consciousness as well, because consciousness is all pervading. Now, in verse 6, Shruti says that the one who has seen this reality, seen, can see all the beings in the self and self in the beings, because he has recognized himself to be that self, and now he sees that self in all. It is like walking into a room, into a hall with many mirrors, and you will see many reflections, but you know that it is only you yourself. That is the vision of a realized master. Even though he goes out in the world and he sees the multiplicity, not that he doesn't see, it doesn't disappear, the world doesn't disappear anywhere. So he does see the multiplicity, but he yet knows the oneness through that multiplicity. And then, tato na viju upsate, whom will he hate? If there are 100 different mirrors and they might show me in different forms, short, tall, fat, thin, etc. But am I going to hate any of those reflections? Because I have a clear understanding that no matter how fat that reflection is, it is me, or how thin it is me alone. So therefore, there doesn't come a question of hating anybody. And along with hate, all the negative qualities. Because when you see oneness, there cannot be any hate. It's like in our own body, when the finger pokes the eye, we don't get angry at the finger, because we have that feeling of I-ness. It's mine. It's me alone. The finger is me. The eye is also me. So if the finger pokes the eye, the same finger will probably soothe the eye by rubbing it, because there's a feeling of oneness. So that sort of feeling comes to the realized master with respect to the entire world. And therefore, there is no hatred. And then also, furthermore, there is no tatra ko moha ka shokaha. There cannot be any delusion and sorrow. I give you the example of dream. While dreaming, you might be very sorrowful, but once you come out of that dream, will you still cry for whatever that happened in the dream? Maybe somebody hurt you, or you saw death of a near and dear one. But will you cry after you wake up? You will cry during the dream, but once you wake up. So the realized master, the one who realizes this, has woken up as though woken up from the dream. So this entire world seems to him like a dream. It is actually a dream. But right now, because all of us are dreaming the same dream, we think it is all real. So it is Mandukya Upanishad, it calls it a Dirgha Swapna. This world is a Dirgha. Dirgha is long dream it is. And we are in the dream. So while dreaming, everything is real. Even our own dream, when I'm actually dreaming it, I think it is all real. I don't think it's a dream. I don't say like that. I say, oh my God, there is, you know, this frightful thing or whatever I'm running or whatever that I'm doing, I think it is real. It's only after waking up do I come to know that, no, what I saw was an illusion. Okay? And because it turns out to be an illusion after I wake up, it was also an illusion while it was happening. And that is the idea of the realized masters. Like, once they recognize it to be an illusion, they know that even before it was an illusion only, it couldn't have been real. If it was really real, it cannot convert itself into an illusion. The world, it is an illusion even now. It is only a matter of us recognizing it. We don't recognize it as an illusion. We take it as real. And that is the delusion. That itself is the delusion. And therefore, he says, after knowing, yasmin sarvani bhutani atmaiva bhut, when he comes to know that the self in all is the self in me, he recognizes that there cannot be any delusion anymore. The next verse mantra 8, is actually a description once again of what was told in the first mantra, or even the before verse 1, Om Purnamada, and it is actually a conclusion of this Upanishad. The knowledge portion ends here, and the remaining portion deals with upasana. And upasana is the transactional world, empirical reality rather. Okay, so it deals with empirical reality. So we'll see this verse. We have seen these words before, but we'll see them once again. Sa paryagat shukram akayam avranam asnaviram shuddham apapavidham kavihi manishi paribhu swayambhu yathartha tathyatorthana vyadadat shashvati bhyah samabhyah. Ishravasya Upanishad, I told you, belongs to Yajurved, right? It belongs to the Shukla Yajurved. The predominantly the mantras in Shukla or Yajurveda itself, Shukla or Krishna, are apadaniyata. Apadaniyata means they cannot be broken down into four quarters. Rigveda has the padaniyata mantras, which can be, most of those can be broken into four, like we chant Bhagavad Gita. But Yajurveda we can't. And that's why you see this is a perfect example of that. If there is a meter, then I don't know, but generally there isn't. So basically what we see here is our words, and these words are describing the pure consciousness. Okay. He the Atman, Saha. He the Atman is all pervading, bright, bodiless, scatheless, without muscles, pure, unpierced by evils, wise, omniscient, transcendent, and self-existing. He alone allotted to the various eternal creators their respective functions. So we'll take these words one by one. Basically, this whole mantra can be divided into three parts. There is a set of words which explains the pure consciousness by way of negation. Not this, not this. Neti, neti. And then the next set explains it by the way of assertion. It is this, it is this, it is this. And then the third set tells us the swarupa or the nature of that transcendental reality. This is how this mantra is. So Paryagat is the first. Saha Paryagat. Saha he. He who he. The Atman. So Atman word is not there, but Gurudev has added it. So of course, obviously, when he's talking about, when Shruti is talking about he, she is talking about the Atman or Brahman or pure consciousness. Paryagat. Pari Agat is the break. Pari is all round. Agat is gone. So basically, it is gone everywhere. And when we say gone everywhere, simple word is all pervading. It is all pervading. And when we say all pervading, we must revert back to that word Purnam that we studied. When we said Purnam, full, what does full mean? That it is not limited at all. It's not limited on account of space. It is not limited on account of time. And it's not limited on account of objects. So this gone everywhere also means it is not limited by space. By time also. Because when we say gone everywhere means it was there in the past, in the present, and will remain in the future. Because if we say it wasn't there in the past, then it has not gone into the past. But Shruti is saying it has gone everywhere. So everywhere indicates space, but space and time are not separable. So space and time are in one. So when Shruti says all pervading, it means Purnam. So when we explained Purnam, we said it is not limited, unlimited. So that's what it means. And gone everywhere, in and through every object. Because we saw that object limitation is there. If I'm sitting here, then there is no other object that is here on this chair other than me. But with pure consciousness, it is in and through the chair. It is in and through me. It is in and through the earth. It is in and through the computer and mouse and stapler and book and everything. So that is what, it's gone everywhere. That is the import of this Paryagat. Okay. So Paryagat. Then Shukram. Shukram is pure, Shukram. So untainted. Shukram is untainted. And why is it untainted? Because there is nothing other than it to taint it. It is one without a second. Tainted, untainted. Kaya is body. That's why Gurudev has translated is, Shukram also bright. Okay. Akayam bodiless. So there is no body, which indicates absence of gross body. So this Paryagat and Shukram, they are assertions. I told you there is three types of words here. So these first two words are assertion. It's asserting that it has gone everywhere. It is asserting that it is bright. And then Akayam, not this. So it does not have a body. So it's a negation, Akayam. Avranams, Vrana is stateless, Gurudev said, but Vrana is also a scar. Vrana is scar. So when he says Avrana, Shruti says Avrana, means there is no scar, means there is no wound. So no wound also indicates no body. Because unless there is a body, there cannot be a wound. So when it says that it does not have any wound, it means that there is no body. Asnaviram, muscles, without muscles. So again, muscles indicate body. If I have muscles, then it has to be in the body. It cannot, there is no muscles in the mind. So asnaviram also indicates negation of gross body. This is all gross body. Yeah? Akayam, avranam, asnaviram is gross body, negation of gross body. Shuddham is pure and apapa vidham, unpierced by evil. So these two words are negating the causal body. Okay, because the evil, pure is again untainted, and one way of looking at pure is that there is nothing else to make it impure. But pure means causal body is the seat of vasanas. And vasanas are the ones that are giving rise to desires, right? Impurities, which are impurities. Any kind of thought in the mind is an impurity. Even though it may be a good desire, it is still a movement in consciousness. It is an agitation. I told you, agitation in Vedanta means doesn't only mean bad thoughts. You know, we say I'm agitated, then I'm worried, then I say agitated. But when in Vedanta we use the word agitated, it means that there is a thought that has arisen. It could be a very good thought, a very noble thought, but in that quiet, silent consciousness, a ripple has come. There is a thought ripple. That thought ripple itself is an impurity. It doesn't matter what thought it is. That is an impurity. So therefore, by saying Shuddha, one meaning is that again, but untainted already Shruti has said. So here Shuddha and Apapa Vidham negate the causal body. Okay, so there is negation of causal body. And then also the subtle body, because no thoughts. When we say pure and no thought, pure is without any thought, then it is negating subtle body as well. Swayambhu self-existence, existing, indicates causeless cause. Our intellect functions only in cause and effect. So everything we see, we want to know what is the cause of it, what is the cause of it, what is the cause of it. But somewhere it has to end. Because we could go into a defect of infinite regress. If we say pure consciousness, then what is the cause? Then there must be another pure consciousness. Then what is the cause of that? Another, like that we could go on forever. So somewhere it has to end. And so Shruti declares that it is Swayambhu means self-existing. You know, we have Swayambhu, Shivlinga and all that, right? Then temples are formed. They came. So Swayambhu means that there is no cause. This is a causeless cause. So the cause hunting has to end there. Oh, I missed one. Kavihi. Sorry, I missed quite a few. So Kavihi. Okay. Kavi, the literal meaning of Kavi is poet. Kavi means poet. Now, if the word Kavi is being used, and this Kavi and Manishi, these are the third type of words, which I told you, they are describing the nature of the self. So with Kavi, what needs to be understood is, it's not that pure consciousness is a poet, but it is like having poet-like qualities. Now, what is a poet-like quality? There is a saying in Hindi, Jahan Ravi na jaye, wahan Kavi jaye. Kavi jaye, Jahan Ravi na jaye. So a poet goes where the sun cannot go. Ravi means sun. So poet goes where this means what? Means this poet has got this imagination which nobody else has. Okay, that is the meaning. So that is what I mean by poet-like quality. Means he can visualize things which others have not imagined. And that is how the human intellect functions. That is why we could think that maybe we can land on the moon. And we did. Maybe we can land on some other planet. That is the vision. So that vision, so nature of the consciousness is such that it has that sort of a vision. Okay, but we must not, please don't misunderstand this as, oh, but pure consciousness has got no subtle body, no nothing. So the conditioned consciousness, Ishwara, will be like Kavi. When we describe the nature, then we have to come down a notch to the Ishwara level. So that is what it is, that the mind can imagine things which others cannot imagine. That is what Kavi. Here it's translated as wise. Okay, so even pure consciousness we cannot say as wise, because pure consciousness, the wisdom is in the mind, and pure consciousness is without subtle body. So these are descriptions of Ishwara, so conditioned consciousness. Okay, Manishi, omniscient. Manisha means desire. Manishina is the word used in Bhagavad Gita also is Muni. Muni, Mananshila iti Muni, the one who thinks. Okay, and omniscient means he can think, the total mind is omniscient. So that's why this Kavi and Manishi is describing Ishwara. So what is happening is very wise, and the total mind is called Hiranyagarbha, Hiranya gold garbha womb. So it has got complete jnana shakti and kriya shakti, complete power of knowledge as well as what to do with that knowledge, action. See, there are two things. Even we have the power of knowledge and we have the power of action. But sometimes we have the knowledge, but we are incapable of putting it into action. You know, many of us know what not to eat, what to eat, what weight to maintain, this, that, exercise. We know all that. Exercise is good for me. You know, eating certain foods is not good for me. All these things we know, but how much are we putting it into practice? So there are two different things. There is, one is the knowledge, and then one is the capacity to put that knowledge into action. So with Hiranyagarbha, the reason that it is called Hiranyagarbha, gold, shining, bright, brilliant, is because whatever knowledge it has, or Ishvara has, it also has the capability of putting it into practice. And that's why in the theory of creation, we say that in this world has come from that Hiranyagarbha, it is said. Means what? Means the thought came in that total mind, and also because that total mind had the capacity to follow up on that thought. You know, many times thought comes to us, but do we follow up? In the morning, I should get up early now. You know, I'll be late for class. But sometimes we can't do it. So that is the difference between jnana shakti and kriya. Both are required for action to happen. If you just do action without knowledge, it is not going to work. And if you have the knowledge, but if you don't follow it up with action, what good is that? I have the knowledge of cooking something, but if I don't really cook it, then what? Only in my mind is not going to appease my hunger. Okay, so these two things it has. And that's why also it is said Shukram, bright. So then Paribhu, transcendent. Bhu, existing. Pari, all around. So again, all around in the world plus transcending. So there is the empirical reality, then there is the transcendental reality. And both, it is both transcendent. And Swayambhu, self-existence, I said causeless cause. Yatha tatyate, respectively, arthan functions. So he alone allotted to the various eternal creators their respective functions. So this Shashvatibhya and Samavya, these are all referring to the deities. So all the, you know, the wind god, the rain god, and all these deities are working under its control, under the control of Ishvara. Again, we must understand this to be as controlled by Ishvara and not by the pure consciousness, because the pure consciousness remains as a non-doer. But without the pure consciousness, Ishvara cannot act at either. Okay. So this is, like I said, it is a description. It is once again a reminder of that supreme reality. And then, therefore, this knowledge part of it end. I mean, later on also there is knowledge, but it's not knowledge of the highest reality. It is knowledge of upasana and karma. Okay. In the Vedas can be divided into three different parts, karma, upasana, and jnana. Okay. And we'll see now that. So karma is action, doing action. Upasana also falls under action, but it is a mental action. It is a mental activity, upasana. And then jnana doesn't fall under action. It is just straight knowledge, which is different. So karma, upasana fall under the karmakanda portion. Karma is gross, upasana is subtle, and jnana is in a total different category. And now we are going to see this karma and upasana. Okay, this is what we're going to see. So, Parigachudam Shukram, nature of assertion, nature of negation. The next three verses have to be studied together, 9, 10, and 11. So, I'm going to read them together. And then we see them as one group of verses. And also the following three have to go as one group. So let's see this first three first, 9, 10, and 11. अंधतम प्रविशन्ति ये विद्यामुपासते ततो भूयैव ते तमः यौ विद्यायां रताः अन्यदेवाहु विद्यया अन्यदाहुर विद्यया इति शुश्रुमधीराणां येनस्तद्विचक्षिरे विद्यां च विद्यां च यस्तद्वेदोमयं भयं सह अविद्यया मृत्युं तीर्त्वा विद्यया मृतमश्नुते सो 9 is they who worship avidya alone fall into blind darkness and they who worship vidya alone fall as though into an even greater darkness. One thing they say is verily obtained by vidya, another thing they say from avidya. Thus we have heard from the wise who explained that to us. He who knows at the same time both vidya and avidya overcomes death by avidya and obtains immortality by vidya. Now, when you take a look at all three verses, the key words here are vidya and avidya. You can say both these words are appearing in all the three verses. And I told you in the introduction that Vedanta is shabda praman. The means to this knowledge, Vedanta, is by words. And there is weakness in the words. The one weakness I told you is that words can have multiple meanings. And so to understand the correct meaning, we have to do a little bit more thinking. That is what it is. Now, and then in words also, there is one which is a direct meaning and one there is an implied meaning. There can be a direct meaning and an implied meaning. And so sometimes when we take the direct meaning, what we are supposed to do is actually for every mantra, take the direct meaning of the word and see if those mantras make sense. If they make sense, then of course you have to go with the direct meaning. But if that direct meaning does not make sense, then we need to relook at the words. So vidya, when I say, the first thing that comes to our mind is knowledge. And avidya, when I say, it is ignorance. Those are the direct meanings of these words. So if we take the meanings of this vidya and avidya to be knowledge and ignorance, then let us see if these verses make sense. All three have to make sense at the same time. It can't be one verse makes sense, other verse doesn't make sense. It is not like that. These three go together. So when they say those who worship avidya, means those who worship ignorance, means worship here, okay. Worship doesn't mean that there is this devi of ignorance and they are doing aarti. No, 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 no. Worship means those who are ignorant. Here, worship means those who are ignorant, okay. And those who have vidya. So those who are ignorant alone fall into blind darkness. Okay, we can live with that. So a person who is ignorant of his real nature will find it fall into dark. Even before one mantra said that they go into this darkness. And that time we told you, darkness means not that there is a world which is completely dark without any lights, but the ignorance will carry forward into his next birth. Just like the headache carries forward with me, it doesn't matter if I go from one room to the other room, the headache is with me, it will go. So if that ignorance is with him, it will go. Now here it is saying, those who, and worship is not praying, those who have ignorance alone fall into blind darkness. Okay, that we can live with. But then those who have jnana, knowledge, if we take vidya to be knowledge, alone fall as though into an even greater darkness. Now this doesn't make sense. How can ignorant I can live with, but with knowledge I'm falling into a greater darkness, then better to be ignorant only, no? So that doesn't make sense. Okay, we'll come back to it again. Now the next verse 10, it says, one thing they say is verily obtained from vidya. This verse makes sense. One result is obtained from knowledge. Another thing they say from avidya. Okay, now that we can live with. Thus we have heard from the wise who explained that verse. So basically what this number 10 verses mantra is saying, ignorance, those who are ignorant, they get a certain type of result. Those who are knowledgeable, they will get another type of result. And that we can we can swallow. I mean, that's not a problem. But the third mantra also has to make sense now. 11. He who knows at the same time both avidya and vidya, vidya and avidya, overcomes death. And now the question is, knowledge and ignorance are two opposite things. How do I know both at the same time? How can I know that? See, if I'm watching TV, I can eat. I can eat and watch TV because they're not, those two actions are not opposite to each other. But if I say that I want to watch TV and take a nap, how can that be possible? Because for watching TV, my eyes have to be open, my mind has to be alert, and to fall asleep, to take a nap, my mind has to be folded, my eyes have to be closed. So cannot watch TV and sleep at the same time. I can eat and watch TV at the same time. Both are actions. It's eating action is an action. Watching TV is an action. Two actions can be done at the same time. While walking, I can talk on the phone. But while walking, I cannot sit somewhere. While walking, I want to sit. I can't. So opposite things I cannot do. So that's why when here Shruti says that at the same time, one is knowledgeable as well as ignorant, it doesn't make sense at all. And this is what tells us that this vidya and avidya, these two words, which are the key words here, cannot be taken as knowledge and ignorance. So they have to be understood as something else. So now what we do is, now we go into the meaning of it. So this prefix a, which we have heard many, many times. Avidya word we have heard many times. A prefix has three meanings. That's what I told you. Words can have multiple meanings. That is the problem. That's why we need to know which meaning to take. So the most common meaning that we know and we have always heard is opposite. So vidya, knowledge, then avidya means no knowledge, ignorance. Or par means shore, and apara means shoreless, no shore. And that is the most common meaning that we have heard, a, opposite. But a also means absent, means it's not there. And a also means different, means it can mean something different. Okay, now this word vidya here in Taittiriya Upanishad and Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, vidya, they say, is upasana. That's why I told you. It is an action. I told you, karma and upasana, both are actions. But vidya is upasana, which is a subtle action. And then avidya, because of that description of vidya in these other Upanishads, avidya becomes karma. So here, avidya and vidya must be taken as karma and upasana. Or both these fall under the Karmakanda portion of the Vedas. That's why I told you, from now on, Shruti is not talking about knowledge. She's talking only about upasana. Okay? So these two words mean karma and upasana. Now, with this new meaning to these two words, now we will look at the verses once again. So when in the 9th verse, it says those who worship avidya, and I told you worship means not worship. So because avidya is karma, means those who do karma alone fall into blind darkness. Karma, the Upanishads say, Kathopanishad also says that, karma can give you, karma is finite, okay? And karma gives you results. It is the law of karma that karma will give you a certain result, but that result also is finite. Because why? Because karma is finite. So result also is finite. So when a person does karma, and in this Vedic times, when it was said karma, and we'll see in the modern context also, but in the previous times, when it was said karma, it meant the karma kanda portion, which means all the rituals. Okay? So it means you do prayers and then you do the homa, yajna. And in the modern times, we do all the prayers. We have no idea of what the priest is chanting, or the priest himself probably doesn't know what the meaning is, right? So when it is said that those who worship vidya, avidya alone, means those who do karma alone without understanding, that is what this alone word means. Alone means not just one, or not only one person is doing it. No, those who are doing this karmakanda, as though fall into blind darkness. They karma, they say, can take you to Swargalok only. Okay, this is Upanishad is saying this. Okay, so means what? Means that there are rituals in the Vedic, you know, in the Vedas, which will take you to heaven. Okay, if you do this ritual, go to heaven. Now, in the modern context, heaven is what? If we, what is heaven? You know, it's a place of comfort. It is a place of happiness. It is a place of sukha, right? That is what heaven is. What is our idea of heaven? There is no sorrow there. There is all kinds of comforts. There's all singing and dancing and music and everything is all happy, happy, happy. In the modern context, that is what we do. We want more comforts because we think that is going to give us happiness. And so we work hard. Karma. Right? We work very hard. We want, we've got a job, we work overtime, we get a bonus, we get a promotion. And why are we doing all that? So that I can be comfortable. I can have a big house, I can have a big car, I can have this, that, etc., etc. Now, they fall into blind darkness. The reason that Shruti is saying blind darkness and heaven is a place of blind darkness, yes. Because heaven is a place from where you cannot get liberation. It will give you comforts. You get all the comforts. You get a body in which you can enjoy all that. There is no sorrow. There is no death. In Swargaloka, there is no death also. Nobody else is also dying. You are also not. No disease. That is the kind of body. See, this human body is prone to disease. But apparently in heaven, they say, now of course, nobody has come back from heaven to tell us. But this is what Shruti says, that in heaven, that body is such that it cannot get any disease. Okay, so that's why though, you know, even in this mortal world, when you see people who are healthy till for a long time, they are in heaven. That's the type of body, it doesn't have any disease. But it is a place of darkness because it doesn't allow you to get the knowledge. You are so much involved in a comfortable living. If you take even in the modern context, that yes, just yesterday I was at somebody's house doing prayers, and that's what I said. Most of the time, that lady of the house, suddenly she lost her husband. That's when she came into Vedanta. That too, she's only at the Brahma Kumari level. She's not into Vedanta complete, but at the but most of the people, that is what happens. When sorrow hits them, they turn towards spirituality, towards philosophy. Until then, as long as you're living a comfortable life and everything is going your way, you really don't think of the philosophy. You say, okay, thank you, Lord, and you light your lamp and all that, you know, all that you do. And that's why Shruti calls this sort of a place. So when we are also very, very comfortable and everything is going our way, that is the time when you need to think that when the situation hits you, how will you be? And people don't think. And that's why it is a place of blind darkness. Okay. Now, those who worship Vidya alone. So those who are doing Upasana. Okay. So they are mentally thinking. They know the meanings of the rituals. They go into an even greater darkness. Because the one who does Karma and Upasana, Upanishad says, they can reach Brahma Loka. Swarga is much, you know, the 14 worlds are there, 7 above, 7 below, right? The highest is Brahmaloka. And heaven is Om Bhur Bhuva Swaha. So heaven is just above this mortal world. So in the hierarchy, it is low. But in Brahmaloka also here, Shruti is saying even greater darkness, because there they say there is even a less chance of getting liberated. Okay. So this is why she says alone. So what they're doing is either they're doing only karma, or then they are only mentally thinking. So in our materialistic world, in the last verse, it will come. So, okay, I'll tell you that. So now one who is doing karma alone and one who is doing upasana alone. And then the next verse mantra, she says, obviously the result of karma, the karma result is one sort of a loka, Pitruloka. And this Upasana will take you to another loka. Okay? Both are darkness only. The reason being, they do not allow you to get that liberation. So that is verse number 10, mantra 10. So that's why, what should we do? What should we do? She says you have to do both together. Means you have to do the ritual also, but at the same time, you must also understand what is going on. See, in the modern respect, this Upasana means meditation. You know, people meditate on the material world. There are people who meditate on, they do Om, even this Om Upasana, which is done. Om Upasana can be done on the A Matra, on the U Matra, and the Ma Matra. It can be done on the any of these three matras. And those who do Upasana on these three matras, they will get that. So the A represents the waking world, U represents the dream world, and Ma represents the causal world. So these three can be achieved by those various meditations. So if you're only doing that, you will get those results. Therefore, Shruti advises, don't do either one alone. Do both together. Means do karma as well as try and understand why it is being done. And here we bring in the principles of karma. If we take our modern day-to-day karmas, because nowadays nobody is doing any yajnas or yagas or anything like that. Previously, it referred to that, the rituals. You do the ritual, but please understand the meaning as well. Okay? So when you do this, when we do action in this day-to-day life with a certain attitude, so karma yoga becomes upasana. In case of our day-to-day actions, karma yoga itself becomes upasana, because I am understanding what attitude I should have behind this karma, this particular action. Okay, then what she says is, then karma avidya mrutyum tirthva, it will take you beyond death, and this vidya, which is upasana, will take you to immortality. Now here, immortality, because I told you karma and upasana can never give you that absolute immortality. Here, immortality must be taken as relative immortality. It is not the absolute immortality that we talk when we talk of liberation, final liberation. Okay, so here this immortality is the worlds which are more immortal than our world. I've told you in Pitruloka, also in the world of ancestors, our 1 year is their 1 day. So imagine, we have studied chapter 8, where they say Brahmaji's 1 day is like 1,000 times 4 kalpas. That's 1 day. So imagine how much more bigger it is than our 1 day. So in that sense, it is immortal. But it is not absolute immortality, because from there also you can come back. That is why Shruti has already called these different worlds as world of darkness, where knowledge cannot happen. You will come back once your merits are over. Okay, is that understood? It's a little bit complicated. Any questions? Think about it. So we'll go over these again. Okay. So the gist of the three verses is, Shruti has first of all used words vidya and avidya. The common meanings of these words is knowledge and ignorance. But when we take the direct meaning of these words to be knowledge and to be ignorance, the three mantras don't make any sense at all. Especially the mantra number 11, which says you have to practice both together. How can one practice knowledge and ignorance together? Can't. It is like watching TV and falling asleep at the same time. No, it cannot be done. Which tells us that vidya and avidya have to have some other different meaning. So what is the different meaning? So, and the reason we come to that is because this a prefix, now this is the first time that we are hearing it, that a means has three meanings. One is opposite, one is different, one is absent. We cannot take it as opposite. If we take opposite, then vidya, avidya become knowledge and ignorance. Opposite. We cannot take that. We have to take it as different. We also cannot take it as absent. Okay, because again, absent means, okay, absence of knowledge or absence of ignorance means again, it comes to knowledge and ignorance. So we have to take it as completely something. It means totally different. Okay, so if avidya is different from vidya, is different from vidya, not opposed to vidya. Because if it was opposed to vidya, then it's knowledge and ignorance. But it is not opposed. It is different. Then what is the meaning of vidya? So we go into another Upanishad. Okay. In that other Upanishad, it is said that vidya is karma, is upasana. Therefore, if vidya is upasana, then karma, this avidya is different. So avidya has to be karma. Therefore, the meanings have to be taken as karma and upasana. Okay. Now, the verse number 10, the easiest. So let's take that first. Mantra is saying the result of karma is something different. Result of upasana is something different. Both karma and upasana, please understand, they fall under karma only. But karma means gross action. So when I'm now speaking, it is karma. But the thoughts are in my head, which are subtle. That falls under upasana. Thoughts which you cannot see. There are thoughts in my mind which are now coming out as gross words. So the words itself, they are karma. And the thoughts are upasana. That is how I understand this karma and upasana. Upasana is an understanding of the gross action. Okay. So the 10th mantra, very simple. If you only do karma without thinking, without knowing, there'll be a different result. Upasana will give you a different result. The first, ninth mantra says that the one who does upasana, karma alone, avidya, right? Avidya falls into blind darkness and upasana falls into an even greater blinding darkness alone. When you do this alone, the reason is that karma is giving you one loka, which is not as higher as the world that upasana is giving you. And all these higher worlds, nobody is talking. No, now, one who is doing karma and upasana never goes into the lower worlds. That is one thing. We have seven worlds beneath us. But those who are doing karma, the rituals, even those who are doing rituals without understanding, they will not fall. They will not fall because they are doing the prayers. They are doing the oblations. They are invoking the Lord. Okay, so they will never fall into the lower worlds, but they will go into this world, which gives them happiness, which gives them comfort, where there is no disease, where there is no decay, where there is no sorrow. Then in that sort of a situation, who will think of liberation? We in this world only, you see, people, everything when things are going smoothly, something when it hits them, there are a lot of people in Bangkok, they've come to us because something hit them. Then, you know, then they woke up and now they came. Very few people are there because they were just there because of whatever their past actions. Okay. So that's why Shruti says that they will go into darkness and these upasana people will go into even the higher world. There'll be even more darkness. So then what is the antidote? What should we do? She says, do both together. Do the karma, understand the upasana, and then it will give you immortality. But please understand, this immortality is a relative immortality. So this is, once again, it is Shruti tells us, and this is said in many other Upanishads, karma and upasana can only take you up to Brahmaloka. It cannot give you liberation. That moksha that is talked about, artha, dharma, artha, kama, moksha is only possible by jnana. And this portion is not talking about jnana at all. So when that word amrutatva, immortality, is used, it has to be understood as a relative immortality, not as an absolute immortality. Okay. That's why I told you, from here onwards, this portion on karma and upasana is starting. Jnana is finished over there. Shruti will always advise you to go for knowledge and go for the absolute immortality. Why do you want to go for something which is impermanent? Go for something which is permanent, which is a point of no return. But these karma and upasanas will give you a point of return. But you will have happiness for the longest time. Long time you'll have. But you have to come back. Therefore, no matter how long it is. Therefore, when we have not done Kathopanishad with you, but in Kathopanishad, Nachiketas was offered a long life and, you know, all happiness and all this thing and money and this and that and dancing girls and whatnot. He says, but ultimately it has to end. It will end. It is finite. It is for a long period of time, long period of time. But nevertheless, it is for a period of time, which means that time will end. And I want something which is not bound by time. And therefore, he goes for the final knowledge. So this portion is talking about that. Okay. The next three verses also we will be taking together. I will stop here now. If there are any questions, let me know. And so the next three we will do together. These three verses talked about karma and upasana. The next three verses will only talk about upasana. Okay. So there will be upasana on the manifest and the upasana on the unmanifest. And then what is the result of my, I already told you that there are people who do this om upasana and they meditate on a and u and m. That is what is meant by upasana on the manifest. Meditation, or because upasana is only a mental activity. There's no now gross activity. So this mentally, when you can meditate on the manifest, and then mentally you can meditate on the unmanifest. And then what happens? And this is what Shruti will explain. And again, upasana, there also there is no absolute immortality. There is only relative immortality. So those are the next three. And then the last three, because that will take us to 14, then 15, 16, 17, and 18. Last four are the prayers. They are prayers of a person who has done upasana all his life. And then what are his thoughts on the deathbed? That what are his prayers? The one who has done upasana, okay? Please understand, not just karma, but who has done upasana. So that is what is there. And you'll find the verse familiar in Upanishad. Ganga Guruji has used that. Okay? So any questions? What is going to happen is we will finish this text. Maybe next Monday unless you guys are okay to go a little bit over time next Monday, we will probably be able to finish it. Or then it will be Monday and the following Monday, which will be June 30th. Okay. So I'll try and finish it next time. Maybe a little bit. We, like I said, we may go over time. Abhimanyu, are you there? Abhimanyu, doesn't look like he's there. Anyway, I'll send him an email. Okay. Any questions? No questions? Okay. So we'll stop here for today. We'll meet next Monday. And like I said, hopefully, because the next three verses should now go a little bit faster. Abhimanyu, I just wanted to ask you, I know that Swami Prakashananji is coming over there.
Yeah.
And he's coming from July 2nd onwards?
1st.
Oh, July 1st. Okay. July 1st is a Monday and I will finish it
next week.
Monday, which is June the 30th. But what I wanted to tell you was that there is a lady named Veda who is coming from Vancouver to Calgary for Swamiji's Yajna.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask you if you had any copies of Mundaka Upanishad. You can check. There is time.
Yes, sir.
So check and let me know next Monday. or send me a quick email. I'm starting the text in Vancouver in September, and I may not have enough copies. And I just had this idea because Vera came to the ashram today to buy some. She bought Tattva Vivek. Is he doing Tattva Vivek? Tattva Vivek, Panchadashi chapter 1?
Panchadashi.
But what chapter?
You just said Panchadashi. I don't know which chapter.
Oh, unless he... Because Panchadashi is 15 chapters. There's no way that he can do 15 chapters.
Must be just the first one.
Just one. Yeah, just the first one. But anyway, so she's coming and I just asked, told her that will she bring a few books for me? And she said she will.
Okay.
So you tell me how many copies you have and then I will... this coming Saturday, I'll So you can send them with her.
That's Mundaka.
Mundaka, yeah. Mundaka Upanishad. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Not Mandukya.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll meet next Monday. And like I said, I will try and complete if it's okay with all of you that I go, if I have to go a little bit over, then we can complete it. If not 30th June, definitely we are completing it. And also, Abhimanyu, I'd like to know what text I'll be starting in September. So I have an idea of what text is coming up next. Because we're completing this before we close.
Yeah.
Whenever, just let me know. Next Monday is fine. Okay?
July 1st is a Monday.
Yeah, but there won't be a class, my class. I'll be done by then. Isn't it June 30th?
No.
Oh, June 30th is a Sunday. Okay.
Yeah.
So next is June 23rd, right? Next, this thing will complete it next time. 24th. Next Monday is June 24th. So if I have to go a little bit over, would that be okay then?
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Because the next, like I said, the next three verses will be quicker.
Okay.
So we'll complete this text next Monday. Please tell me by next Monday how many copies, if at all, you have of Mundaka Upanishad. And also, please let me know what text is next for us. Okay?
Sure.
All right. Okay. We'll close for now. We'll see you next Monday. Om Purnamadav Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Avashishate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Okay.